This is 7-5 Radio with Walter Yerkew and Peter Scoop Stanton. This is the radio show that will break your neck if your neck needs breaking. And here are the hosts of 7-5 Radio, Walter Yerkew, star of the biggest documentary movie ever made, The 7-5, and Peter Scoop Stanton, who starred in To Catch a Predator.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever it is when you're listening to this. I am Peter Scoop Stanton. If it sounds like I'm talking to you on the telephone, well, I am. I am headed to work on this beautiful day, and I'm stuck in traffic because all of our federal employees in the District of Columbia are headed out for an early weekend. Walt, how are we doing today?
Oh, pretty good, my friend. Pretty good. You know, it's pretty okay. Nice down here, too.
Oh, great. All right, let's get down to what we do every day. We remember those law enforcement officers that were murdered in the line of duty. We want to remember Police Officer Jesus Marrero Martinez of the Manati Municipal Police Department in Puerto Rico. End of watch, May 25th, 2019. He was killed attempting to stop a carjacking while he was off duty. Unfortunately, he got put one perpetrator in a box. Unfortunately, the other ones got to him first, and he was killed in the line of duty. But anyways, Walt, some big news, some big goings on with 7-5 Radio. Just let the, everybody that don't have a computer or a smartphone or wait for Telegram. We've been doing a little bit of upgrades. Walt decided to start a Facebook group for 7-5 Radio and the 7-5 movie. And it turns out we have lots of fans that like both the 7-5 movie and 7-5 Radio. And we'll be getting a lot of positive feedback from our fans. We say thank you very much. But one fan contacted me via Facebook at Scoop Stanton on Facebook, and he had a very interesting story to tell. Not as quite as interesting as yours and Walter's or the other guys with New York's Finest, but just shows like how dirty leadership in police departments, the sheriff's offices, and other law enforcement agencies are. We have on the phone Mike Guerin. Mike, are you on the phone?
Yes, good morning.
Okay, Mike, just tell us a little bit about yourself and what happened to you in terms of doing your job?
Okay, first, guys, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to come on. Great big fan of the 7-5, and I've been very fortunate to actually get to meet Walter and Mikey, and just happy to have their friendship, and also getting connected with you this week. We've had some great conversations, but like you said, my story is nowhere near as epic as those guys, but it's around the same time area, except just here in Tennessee. But keep me on track. I'll start telling stories and chasing rabbits, so I try to stay on point. But I became a cop just right out of high school, fall of 87, and had absolutely no desire to be a cop. I had always dreamed about being a firefighter. I lived in a little small town, and when I was a kid, there was a little show on TV called Emergency that I was glued to every time it came on, so I was just enamored with being a firefighter. I became a volunteer firefighter in my little hometown just as soon as I turned 18, and that whole summer, I sat at the fire hall waiting for something to burn or somebody to crash or something. But that's how I got to know the police officers real well in town. We were stationed at the same station as the police department, and at nighttime in this little town, it was kind of boring, but we out on occasion would ride with the police officers during their shifts at night. And man, I caught the bug. I was hooked. And so as luck would have it, I ended up a reserve police officer there. And you know, it was just it was amazing. You know, I was a kid. I was 18, 19 years old. And but this town is quite like Mayberry. Very similar. We had two red lights, and we did have paved streets, but it was just a very small hometown. And as I said, I kept wanting to be part of the police department, and the police chief had told me, he said, "Son, you go get a job, and I'll put you on reserves," because I sat around that whole summer not working, just hanging out at the fire hall. So I went out and got me a job at a grocery store, and he was true to his word. He put me on the volunteer or reserve police force, and that's when it began. And you know, that rocked along a little while, and a police chief called me into his office one day, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, what have I done? This, you know, I've not really gotten into anything. And he said, "I've got an opportunity for you." At that time, the 10th Judicial District, which we were a part of in Tennessee, comprised of four counties, they come up with a drug task force. And it's much like you guys are familiar with task force there, you know, a different task force for this and that and other. It was comprised of officers from different departments. Well, he had a plan, which he let me know later on that he was going to run for sheriff soon. So he wanted everybody to see what he was doing to in the war against drugs. So he donated an officer to the drug task force. And I just happened to be the guy. So it was quite amazing. I went from a reserve police officer to a paid drug agent overnight. And basically, though, it was just for his gain. But it turned out to be very, fortunate for me. That's where my law enforcement career really began. And I worked on that task force for 6-8 months. And we were rocking and rolling. You know, it's nothing like New York down here. But back then, especially in our area, marijuana, meth, things of that nature.
Mike, we're coming to our first commercial break. Stay tuned. You can talk about what happened to your career and what the end result was. This is 75 Radio at Liberty News Radio Network.
Yeah, this is David in engineering.
This is your wife in suburbia.
Oh, hi, hon. What's up?
How's the robot coming?
Well, it doesn't exactly respond to requests yet, but
Well, I know how frustrating that can be.
You do?
Uh-huh. I'm still waiting for my romantic lunch date.
Oh, yeah.
David.
Well, I must not have enough memory allocated.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
You know, your son said mama today.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, we'll have to have that sound chip changed to Dada.
Well, you could reprogram it yourself, you know.
I know. Hey, why don't we do it over lunch today?
Oh, you really are brilliant.
Thanks. You want me to bring the robot?
David.
He can order pasta in 11 languages.
Only if he pays for his own lunch.
Okay. Oh, don't forget to bring Chip.
I still wish we hadn't named him that.
Well, why? It beats General Default.
Oh.
Family. Isn't it about time?
Do you know that a baby processes information 3 times faster than an adult?
An adult what?
Engineer. Funny.
I'll see you at noon.
I can't wait.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only seven countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
You're back, and Scoop is just getting back from posting insults on Twitter. This is still 7-5 Radio.
I'm Scoop Stanton. I'm still talking on my phone. I'm driving to work on the Beltway. The noise you hear in the background is federal employees that you pay for headed out early for the weekend. And so anyways, we got a super fan, Mike Garrett, on the phone. Mike, talked about how you got hired on the job as the agent for a drug task force in Tennessee. Why don't you bring us up to where the incident concerning you and a famous maglite. Those out in the field know that maglites go from 2C batteries to 4D batteries. I call them pipes with a lamp on it. Take it away, Mike.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll fast forward. I could talk for days about this stuff, but after drug task force, I spent some time with the McMinn County Sheriff's Department, and that's where I got baptized into politics quite, you know, heavily. I was young. I didn't understand the game. I was just a cop out there, doing my job, being the great crusader between what, right and wrong. But anyway, the little stint with the McMinn County opened my eyes to politics, and I ended up leaving McMinn County and going to Etowah, where the incident happened, and just going straight to the day that it happened. We had been through some budget cuts in Etowah. It's a very small town, like 3,500 people population, and they'd had to lay off some officers, and I was actually one of the ones that was fortunate to keep my job, but we were working 16-hour shifts, which I worked second shift, third shift, and if you arrested anybody or had to go to court or anything the next day, you basically either had no sleep or slept a couple hours. But the day that happened, I had been in court all morning, came to work for my second shift, and it was just a crazy shift. I had a lot of stressful things going on. Had a child come up missing. We had to do a search for this child. But the beginning, the end of my career started that afternoon. We had a new interim city manager who showed up on the scene of a heart attack. We had responded to a little small area there, And there were just two police officers on patrol. And of course, we responded, to help if possible. And I get there first, and I'm doing CPR on this lady laying on the floor. And all of a sudden, somebody's pecking me on the shoulder. And I look up, and it's just the new city manager in these people's homes wanting to talk to me outside. And not so many words that I can't share on family radio told her to go outside, and I'll be with her in a minute. I'm actually in the floor doing CPR on this lady. But anyway, after that ended, we had a discussion outside, and she was livid that both police officers were tied up on the scene of a medical call, and the city was uncovered, and while we were doing this. And anyway, I lost my mind to this lady. So anyway, that was the big target that hung on my back that day. But later on that night, we had a incident with a guy who had been calling the police department all day, threatening to burn the place down. He'd been in trouble with the law a lot, and he was going to catch one of us out, one of the officers out, and kill them, this, that, and the other. Well, by pure happenstance, later on, we had shift change at midnight, but I stayed on. But I come across this guy. Just pure happenstance. We were on a different related call. And so here's this guy. I'd never met him before. And so I said, you and I need to have a talk. And, immediately the fight began. He just jumped up, and we got in a nice big brawl, all three of us, my partner and him. And so anyway, we finally got him cuffed and in the patrol car, and we're taking him over to the county jail. And back then, the police cars that we had, we didn't have like the plexiglass protective screen. It was just more like a cage in between the seats. So this guy starts spitting on me through the cage, spitting blood on me, because he'd got his mouth busted in the little altercation, and he kept saying, I've got AIDS, you're going to die, and just spit. And this is about a 20-25 minute ride to the jail. And keep in mind, I'm absolutely completely exhausted from the day, no sleep. And I had been taught from a very young age by my father that you never spit on anybody. And if he ever found out that I spit on somebody, he's going to whip my tail. And he said, vice versa, if anybody ever spits on you, you better whip their tail. So anyway, cops are supposed to be emotionless. But the more we drove, the more he spit, the angrier I became and more enraged. But we get to the jail, and I'd already radioed ahead that, we had a combative prisoner. And so we get there. There's quite a gathering out in front of the jail, some Athens City police officers and the corrections officers. And so open the car door and tell him to get out of the car. And he said, well, you take me out to you, blah, 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 blah. So I reach in, pulled him out, and as he stood up in front of me, he spit in my face, spit blood right in my face.
Jesus.
I had a out-of-body experience. I just lost my mind. And it was night. And like I said, I had the trusty mag light hanging there on my belt. And before I even knew what happened, I just cracked him right across the head with that light. And he quit spitting. Things just happened so quickly after that. He went down, and I'm kind of walking down the street, trying to collect my thoughts. And the bad thing about it is he was still handcuffed. And if I had it to do over again, I wished I shouldn't have done it at all, but I wished I would have at least uncuffed him. Anyway, they ambulance comes, they haul dude to the hospital. I had to follow him since he's my prisoner. They put a few stitches in his head, and I bring him back to the jail, and, you know, all is good. Till I come
now,
to work
did
the
he,
next day.
After, well, going, coming back from the hospital with stitches, did he spit anymore?
No, no. He was quite humbled. No more spitting. You know, and if I remember correctly, I mean, we even kind of had a conversation, you know, but it was just, it was a peaceful ride back, got him back, you know, they cleared him and he went in, they booked him. And, so I just went about my merry way and came to work the next day and I was suspended. And, there's so many, the stars did not align in my favor that day. One of the corrections officers that was at the sheriff's department, we had a new sheriff, and their new staff. This one of the corrections officers was a person that I had had many run-ins with when I was at the sheriff's department.
All right, and Mike, we're coming down to our second break. I can finish the story on the other side. And then you and Walter can handle the last segment myself, yourself, the 45 mark. This is 75 Radio on Liberty News Radio Network. Take it away, boys.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
How does President Trump really feel about the idea of Democrats wanting to impeach him?
The word impeach, it's a dirty, filthy, disgusting word.
President Trump speaking to reporters outside the White House earlier this morning. Yesterday, after special counsel Robert Mueller made his first public comments since finishing his probe, he said, quote, "If we had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so in the report." President Trump says of Mueller,
"I think he is a total conflicted person. I think Mueller is a true never-Trumper. He's somebody that dislikes Donald Trump."
The president heading to Colorado to address graduates at the U.S. Air Force Academy. Severe weather expected again today from the Ohio Valley to Mid-Atlantic. Tornadoes could strike Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and New Jersey. This is USA Radio News.
Hey, guys, Ken here from Income Store. Did you know of the top 10 reasons an employee stays at a company for more than 2 years, the seventh reason is the pay or the salary? The first six reasons have nothing to do with money. Things like they feel part of a team, they know they belong, their voice is heard, they're respected. Also, employees go through five phases within a couple days to 6 months of any new position. Excitement, education, reality, doubt, then clarity. Did you know it's a manager's job to walk them to clarity as fast as possible? If you need to know these fundamental principles, fundamental, did I just say that? I'm going to leave that in. If you need to know these fundamental principles, I can't say this. This is awesome. This is like a blooper roll. Hey, you know what? If you need tips and techniques like this to grow your business today, you got to check out door number one of Income Store. If you just need somebody to literally hold your hand and get you to the finish line, check out door number two of IncomeStore.com. That's IncomeStore.com.
Unconfirmed reports are that a man who set himself on fire at the White House Ellipse yesterday has died of his injuries. President Trump says he plans to make a big announcement about the southern border soon. Speaking outside the White House, Trump said earlier this morning that it could happen today or tomorrow. He called it his, quote, biggest statement so far concerning the border, and he says it will focus on people coming into the United States illegally. He's also ripping U.S. asylum procedures, calling them ridiculous. It will be very difficult for Disney to continue filming in Georgia if a new restrictive abortion law takes effect, according to what CEO Bob Iger said in an interview with Reuters today, adding that many people will not want to work in that state after it passed a law that bans abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected. Disney filmed blockbusters Black Panther and Avengers Endgame in Georgia. This is USA Radio News.
Wow, you're still listening? Here's more 7-5 Radio.
And Mike Guerin, talking about what happens when you apply a MagLife with some force behind it for some mope spitting blood in your face. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, and you know, that time, Scoop, this is September of 90. AIDS was kind of it was just coming to the forefront, and it was a scary thing. And, you know, this guy, he would have been a perfect candidate to be an AIDS carrier, an IV drug abuser, and so on and so forth. So anyway, a complaint was filed with the city manager, who was not a fan of Mike Guerin whatsoever. So she called the district attorney's office there and asked them to pursue charges, and they declined. Said, "It's, you know, this is a departmental matter." That did not suffice her, so she called the Tennessee Bureau of Investigations, which told her the same. You know, it's a departmental matter, no issue here. Not to be outdone, she then called the FBI. Well, the FBI had a duty to come in and investigate, and so they did. And I ended up, I resigned from the department. So time rocked along, and I happened to be in Cocoa Beach, Florida in March of 1991 on my honeymoon. And I'll never forget this day as long as I live. I was standing there eating breakfast, looking out at the ocean and the TV's playing, and they're showing the little Rodney King incident in L.A. that just happened. And it was almost like I lost all feeling in my body when I saw it. I'm like, okay, this is not going to end well for me. For some reason, I just thought that. And lo and behold, it did affect my case. But let me first say this. The perp in my situation was a white guy, thank God. Not that I'm racist whatsoever, but, the Justice Department put out an edict that all police brutality cases be thoroughly investigated after Rodney King. Well, little old country boy Mike fell right in that pool of people. And the United States Attorney in Chattanooga would not prosecute my case. They had to fly a special prosecutor from Washington, D.C. to Chattanooga, Tennessee over a 2-year period to prosecute my case. And amongst all this, there was a civil suit. He sued us, sued me and my partner, another guy, for $7.6 million, and had to go through a civil trial. And we came out fine on that. But long story short, I ended up pleading guilty to this. I was indicted on a charge of a violation of civil rights under the color of law. But the biggest thing is he was still handcuffed, and I get that. And I never denied it. I never shirked responsibility. They spent millions of tax dollars flying this guy from Washington to prosecute me. So I ended up pleading guilty. And the day of my sentencing, I stood in the federal courthouse there in Chattanooga and watched the federal judge send 10 to 12 people off to the federal pen or halfway house. I knew I was a goner. I was looking at, 2 to 5 years. And if I'd have went to a jury trial, it could even been more. But I felt like, there's no need for a trial. I did this. I shouldn't have. And so the judge looks down at me and says, "Officer Guerin, do you have anything you'd like to say before I pass sentence?" And I couldn't breathe. I barely could stand. And and choking back tears, I told him, Your Honor, you have a job to do just like I did that day, and I accept. So he kind of leans back in his chair and looks down over his reading glasses, and he just absolutely just destroys the U.S. attorney. He said, this has been the biggest waste of government money in the history of whatever. He said, by happenstance, this same judge was the one to preside over the civil trial. So he knew all the aspects, and he looks down. He said, I know more about this case than you do. And he said, looked at me, and he said, Officer Guerin, you know, the court does not condone your actions, but they're certainly understandable. And he said, I sentence you to 1 year of unsupervised probation and a $50 fine. And, I started breathing again. But during that whole two-year process, it drug out for 2 years. This attorney from Washington says, well, we can't proceed. We got to see how things work out in L.A. And this guy just, he was a black man, prosecutor.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. And, I kept telling him, I said, dude, this ain't L.A. this is Podunk, Tennessee, and circumstances. But anyway, they drug that along for, it was a two-year ordeal. It was over as far as I knew. And they went and processed me and fingerprinted me and set me up with my probation officer. And I wrote him a $50 bad check and had to boogie back to town and borrow $50 from a friend to cover that check that I just wrote to the court. But that was quite a ride.
Wow. Well, what do you make of all this, what happened to poor Mike?
Hey, Mike, how are you, my friend? Glad
Great.
To have you on the show this morning. My thing on Mike's story now, I met Mike a few times. First time was about 3 years ago or so. And we sat down, we had lunch, and he told me about, what happened to him back then. And, my take on it is that, again, you have a white bread America that does not know what in the hell they're talking about when something, and using Mike's case, when something like this happens and why it happens. At the time we were doing this, we were in our early 20s, mid-20s, and, you learn from all the guys that were on the job, and they were on the job for 25 and 30 years, and they say they did this and they did that, and sometimes you see them do this and that. You got this mutt in the back spitting at you with blood and spit and whatever else he had in his mouth, maybe a few teeth. But my take on it is that I don't think Mike did anything wrong. He stopped an attack that was happening, and it's like somebody holding a gun and saying, my gun is loaded, but they're not pointing it at you yet. My gun's loaded, and they put it up, and you shoot them, and it's not loaded, and you get blamed for shooting an unarmed man. They just don't know what the street rules are. We know what the penal laws are. But I think Mike got railroaded into a situation because of something that happened 1,800 miles away from his house. But they didn't take into consideration what happened to Mr. Denny when they pulled his ass out of the truck and beat the hell out of him for no reason. My take on Mike is he got railroaded. His smack that the judge gave him was, just that. It was a smack. And it doesn't – Mike didn't deserve to be persecuted in such a way. The money, like he said, they spent, hundreds of thousands, maybe a million and a half on Mike in 2 years to do this to him, which police officers in a small town like his don't make a damn dime, let alone – have the local government spend $1 million on a nonsense case. You're going to take that money, man, pay the cops and give them the tools to work against these mutts. Mike, I hate that this happened to you.
You know, this happens every day in a big city, time and time again, more than once a day, and nothing comes of it. Why? Because it stopped what the guy was doing, and that's how I look at it as a defense. You took action on something that was happening to you, and it stopped. And, you know, what else are you supposed to do?
All right, we're coming to our third and final break. I'm going to turn the radio over to Walter and Mike and talk about whatever they want. Hopefully they get to the project incident. All right, everybody, have a good one. Stay right here on 7-5 Radio.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get co-certified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the sh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this. The Kosher Certified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities, and it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start memeing it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
This is 7-5 Radio with Walter Yuku. I mean, Walter Yurkow. I mean, Walter Kiwi. Here's Walton Scoop.
Well, we're back and Scoop isn't. He's trying to get that little hamster phone of his face with all that background noise driving around up there in D.C. with all the big shots. We got my friend Mike Garin still on the air with us, and this is our last segment, and I want to get to a few things with Mike. Mike lives in southern Tennessee, not too far from where I live, and it's beautiful down here right now.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, as soon as we're done with this interview, I'm jumping in the pool and taking a nap on the floor. We try to get on this radio show, we try to get input from our fans, our foes, and everybody in between. And Mike happens to be a fan of the 7-5, and now he's part of the 7-5 family. He's the only one in the entire world of 6 billion people that has a Walter T-shirt signed by both myself and Mikey Dab. The only one in the world. So, you know, this guy, you people out there, you know, we can arrange that for you people out there also. Just let me know. And not just my T-shirts. We could probably do it with Mikey's T-shirts, too. But I've been a Michael friend. I've met him a few times. We've had lunch a few times. He's met Michael. We've all had lunch. I think there's a picture of us he put up on Facebook of us in Applebee's in Chattanooga. And we had a good time that day. We had a really good time that day. And
yes,
from that point on, I think Michael and I went off to Riverbend or something.
Yeah,
enjoyed that. As a matter of fact, Riverbend's in Chattanooga this weekend. Next weekend coming up. No, it's this weekend. Yeah, it's going on right now.
Yeah, going on right now.
Yeah, going on right now. So I can imagine when I go to work later, what kind of traffic I'm going to hit. But stay in Chattanooga for the next 3 days, people, because it's a mess. Anyway, getting back to Mike and his story, you know, I told Michael a long time ago, Michael Dowd a long time ago, when they were chasing us and indicting us and persecuting us and prosecuting us, they spent millions of dollars, you know, not only to bring us to trial, but, you know, even more to put us in the joint. Now, thank God that Mike Garron didn't have to go to the joint because, you know, it sucks. You know, being white and being in jail is not the thing to do these days. Not that I'm prejudiced, but, you know, it's loaded with minorities and gangs and mafia Mexicans and all this nonsense. And, you know, and then on top of it, you know, you're law enforcement and you're going in. You know, it's a rough road, but, you know, I got a few lumps, but I gave out a few more. They spent millions of dollars. You know, if they just gave us the money and said stop and go away, you know, we would have done that probably. Because, you know, I don't think we've committed any crime since we got out of jail. We, you know, not like we did in the old days. But as far as my friend Mike Garron here, you know, cracking this guy in the head with a flashlight, you know, it stopped the attack. And that's what this guy was doing in the back. It stopped an attack. And, you know, if Mike didn't feel like he was being attacked, Mike, if you just let it go, what do you think would have happened?
You know, I've often wondered, Walt, if I'd have just walked away. You know, I don't know. It's one of those things, you know, like I said earlier, you know, police are supposed to be robotic. You're not supposed to feel emotion. And I'll be honest with you, there was a point in that ride between Etowah and Athens where I literally had the thought of stopping and dragging this dude out in the field and putting a bullet in his head. You know, I was that enraged. But you know, thank God I didn't do that. And, you know, I'm a big proponent, you know, everything happens for a reason. Will I ever know? It made me a better man. It's made me a stronger man. And I've been very fortunate. Thank God that many people, have, you know, I'm a felon, class C felon, federal felon. And, I've been able to jump through some hoops and present my case, and I was able to go on to EMT school, paramedic school, and hold those licenses that felons aren't allowed to hold. But, you know, they realize that, you know, that I'm, and that's something you touched on a show or two ago about, you know, the word felon, when it's attached to you, you know, nobody cares what it was. You're just a felon, and nobody will give you a chance.
Right.
You know, but I have to say I've been very blessed that didn't keep me from doing it. The only thing I can't do is own a gun and, you know, whatever. I actually got my voting rights reinstated.
Okay.
back several years ago. I had to file a petition with the federal court and so on and so forth and jump through the hoops, but I can vote. And to be honest with you, Walter, that is the most precious thing that I hold dear in my life, even though politics in this world today is just absolutely a disaster. But when early voting starts, I'm one of the first people there. That is your only thing we have really sacred left is our right to vote. And I just thank God that I still have that, that I got it back.
Right. The this guy that you allegedly hit with a small flashlight. Was he ever tested for any kind of transmittable disease such as HIV or AIDS or hepatitis or you name it? Was he ever tested for anything such?
That great question. And he, as far as the AIDS, I don't know, but by just pure happenstance, my fiance at the time was a lab tech at the local hospital where he had to go get and which, of course, now I can't, she would be fired for HIPAA or whatever now, but she looked and found out he was positive for Hep C. And if I'm not mistaken, he ended up dying, several years later in prison from the hepatitis. So, and who knows what else he had?
Yeah. Well, many, many years ago, when I was running the streets in East New York, we come up on a domestic dispute, and of course, you don't know what the hell's going on. You see a guy beating the crap out of a girl. And you take action. I mean, you can't not take action. It was the middle of the day. Of course, all the drug dealers and all the mutts were all around. So you got to do something. But we got out of the car. I had a female partner at the time, and I pulled the guy off of the lady, and she started talking to the lady. So it seemed like at the time, in the blink of an eye, a good situation. I had a female officer. She could take care of the female victim. I was taking care of the male guy. And the guy, he spit at me, and he missed for the most part. And, I slammed him with a right, and I broke my finger. And about a week later, I was in the hospital with hepatitis. I blew up yellow, and oh, man, it was a mess. Well, I was in the hospital for over a week. So, you don't know what in the world. You can't walk around with a freaking hazmat suit on and a shield on your chest and a gun on your hip. You can't do that. It's impossible. And, you have these people, like I said, white bread America just doesn't get it. And I had people making complaints about it and everything. And there was more people making complaints that I hit the guy and I shouldn't have than people saying, well, he was trying to control the situation. The girl jumps on my back. The girl jumps on my back because I just clocked her boyfriend. So, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Fortunately, I had a tough partner that day, and she took, she grabbed the lady off my back by the hair, and we both got complaints, but it never went anywhere, not a word. Then I ended up in the hospital with hepatitis, and that kind of squashed anything that was going on. I feel your pain. I feel for you that you lost your job over some mutt, and not only some mutt, but some idiot in the legal office that wanted to persecute you. Why? Who knows? Who knows? For the most part, the boys in blue and DA's office and, any kind of other law enforcement agency, would stick together on most things, I would say. I never expected them to stick together on my thing, or Michael expected them to stick together on his thing. But when it comes to a fisticuffs or teaching a street lesson, you can't even look at somebody these days the wrong way without getting a complaint. He had that look in his eyes like he was going to do something if I said something. It's ridiculous. Got to take the streets back. And sometimes the way to take the streets back is to let the streets do what they're going to do. Well, Mike, about this, and I think that's how much I've enjoyed having you on, and how much Scoop has enjoyed having you on. I enjoyed talking to you this week to get you on. Hopefully we can do it again, and, you know, we got to go down and have a beer sometime, but that would be.
Yeah, I'd be great. I'd love to see you, Walt.
All right, this is 7-5 Radio, another week, another one in the books, talking to my friend Mike Garin, and he's a good friend of my friend Mikey Dabb, and you just have a pleasant, safe week, people.
This is James Edwards for 7-5 Radio. For those who work the streets and the jails, thanks for keeping us safe. So long, everybody.